Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our COVID-19 update for August 5th, 2020, joined by our Health Commissioner, Dr. Gail Burstein, and our interpreter is Kendra Schmidt from Deaf Access Services. I need everyone to wear their masks in here, including those that do not have a mask on. That would be you, David. I need you to put your mask on.
I'm sorry, sir.
I need you to put your mask on. Just for certain. Well, I'm far enough away. You're within a few feet of your cameraman, so. We've already had to remind people, including by letter, that if they don't wear their masks in their building, they will be removed. So here we are on August 5th, 2020. Appreciate everyone following the rules, because that's how we stay exactly where we are right now, which is good numbers. So, as always, we have an update, and the update is presented as with information as is most current at the time that we prepared it, and that was prepared within the last hour, and there are always sometimes some information that comes in that pops up afterwards, so we do have this little proviso. I think you're used to that by now. As of yesterday, there are 8,541 total positive cases since the beginning of the outbreak. These are all individualized cases. These are not repetitive for different people. It is one per person out of 232,000 plus specimens that have been tested. These are all lab confirmed cases, and there are no presumed positives. Heard me say that since early on, though it's still amazing the amount of people who say you're not confirming cases, those are presumed positive. That is not correct. On August 3rd, there were 33 individuals admitted to Erie County Hospital with COVID-19. Six individuals were in the ICU, three individuals had an airway assist, and as was announced yesterday, there are 671 people who died as a result of COVID-19 since the outbreak began. And this is the numbers as of August 3rd. You will note that we had 33. It was a slight increase from the day before, but we've pretty much been in the same area for the last few weeks. And what's interesting, we also want to look at the percentage of those hospitalized. 60% of those hospitalized are over the age of 60, or 65 or older, I should say. So we do have individuals in the 20 to 44 range that are still hospitalized in Erie County hospitals with COVID-19. And the majority of individuals, though, are over the age of 65. We do have some new hospitalization data that came from the state for August 4th, and this is good because it actually shows for Western New York, and we have not received the Erie County figures yet, but for Western New York, there are 29 hospitalized, 8 in the ICU. So there has been a drop in just one day, so we anticipate seeing a drop with the Erie County numbers as well. The cases by age and gender, we have 8,541, as we said, and of course, as we've been showing the last couple few weeks, number one age group is the 20 to 29 age group, which has the largest number of cases, and the rest are all fairly similar, slight differences, This just goes to show that regardless of your age, you can catch COVID-19. It's not just an illness that is for those who are older, which unfortunately a lot of people seem to think is that if you're younger, you can't catch it. Well, you can catch it. There's no doubt about that. We have some interesting data to show, as we've been showing this lately, with regards to the percentages by age group for the new cases on a weekly basis. We were seeing some growth in the 20 to 29 age category. It was making up roughly a third, or approximately a third of all cases. That has dropped down to 20.3% for the week ending August 1st. We did see a slight increase in the 30 to 39 year category, and we saw an increase in the 50 to 59 year category. Those are not horrible based on the numbers. We're glad to see the 20 to 29 year olds have dropped. That's important because that was an age group we're very worried about because it could spread COVID-19 to others even if they themselves would not get ill from it. Cases in Erie County by gender and residence, this has been pretty similar for the last couple months, with females making up 56% of the cases in Erie County. And when it comes to the residences, City of Buffalo making up about 46% of the cases, and the rest of the county 54%. That's a higher percentage of the population than you would normally expect from the City of Buffalo, with the City of Buffalo only making up 28% of our general population. I'll turn it over to Dr. Burstein to talk about testing, as we continue to do lots of testing on a weekly basis for COVID-19 diagnostic testing as well as antibody testing. And I will put my mask on. There you go.
Thank you. So good afternoon. So as our county executive mentioned, we are still doing well with keeping our numbers down. So the week ending August 1st, the proportion of positive tests in our among Erie County residents that were tested was still 1.3%. So we really want to stay as low as possible. So this is a good number. And the good news is we had over 20,000 people tested last week. So again, we really want to keep those number of people tested up and the proportion who test positive low. Looking at our antibody testing, still show that many Erie County residents have not been exposed to COVID-19 and do not have any type of antibodies, which we're hoping will lead to some type of a protective immunity, but still most of Erie County residents are susceptible. So last week, only 5.5% of the almost 2,000 Erie County residents that were tested positive for antibodies. So again, there are still a lot of susceptible people. About 93% of Erie County residents are susceptible to COVID-19. So looking at our mortality data, unfortunately, again, we just want to call out our condolences to people who've lost friends and family to COVID-19. You can see the predominant proportion of people who have lost their lives to COVID-19 have been our seniors, people 60 or up. However, just still want to point out that there are people in all the different age groups who have unfortunately come to surmise and have died from COVID-19. So nobody is immune. There are people who have comorbidities. In the medical journals, we're finding out that people have had like undiagnosed immunodeficiencies that are really rare and have not been known before. They didn't have any type of weird virus that had unfortunately people in their teens and 20s who died. So just everybody is at risk, and you can't assume just because of your age that you're going to be protected. And then looking at the demographics of our Erie County residents who have died of COVID-19. So looking at residences, we know that the proportion of people who were diagnosed with COVID-19 who live in the City of Buffalo and who live outside of the City of Buffalo is very similar to our population of Erie County residents who live inside the City of Buffalo and outside of the City of Buffalo. And then looking at our demographics in terms of the proportion of people who have who died of COVID-19 in Erie County are, again, much older people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and a higher proportion are in that older age group compared to the proportion who live in Erie County. So, again, we have to be very, very careful still with protecting our seniors and, you know, making sure that they're taken care of, that they have a way to get food, they don't have to go out, and they have all their needs met without having to go outside. And then also, if with the warm weather, we know that, you know, people want to come visit their grandparents, but again, it's really important to social distance, it's really important to mask, and that still holds true even in the nice weather. So looking at race ethnicity for our mortality, so again, we see that the proportion of people who have died of COVID-19 are similar races to the proportion of people of our Erie County residents. And so you can see that, as for example, about 80% of our fatalities are from COVID-19 are white, and about 80% of Erie County residents are classified as white, as whereas about 16% of people who've died of COVID-19 are classified as black or African American, and about 15% of Erie County residents are classified as black or African American. So again, we've really tried hard working with our community partners, and we still continue to work hard to make sure that people who are diagnosed with COVID-19 get the best care possible. People are checking on them and they have the resources that they need. So just in terms of diagnostic testing and antibody testing, we are still offering both of these tests through Erie County Labs. So you can call 716-858-2929 to schedule either test, an antibody test or a diagnostic test. For the antibody testing, we do have online testing available. For both, there are no costs. They are free throughout Erie County. You don't need a doctor's referral or any kind of lab rec. Remember, these are by appointment only. Especially for the diagnostic testing. So if you know that you're not going to be able to show up for the diagnostic testing, please let us know so we can give that spot to everybody else. With people coming back into the area for school and, students having to go outside the area for college and they need a test before they leave, we're getting very, very busy. So please call to schedule an appointment, and you can't expect to walk up for the diagnostic testing. For the antibody testing, we always have room to take in one more person, but the diagnostic testing is pretty tight. So remember, we have diagnostic testing, a specimen collection, three times a week. On Mondays, we're in Williamsville. Wednesdays, and we're Orchard Park. And on Thursdays, we're in Buffalo. And then we are throughout the county, throughout the month, with antibody testing. So on Thursday, we're going to be in Alden. On next week, we're going to be in Hamburg, and then in West Seneca. And then, again, you can go to our Erie County testing site, our map, our interactive map, at erie.gov/COVID test sites, and look at where is a testing site near you if you want diagnostic testing or antibody testing, and it'll tell you what type of tests they offer. If you click on where the DARS or the DOTS, where the test sites are located, if you need a lab rec or physician's order, and if you need to provide any type of proof of insurance or copayment. So just going to talk about how Erie County responds. Do you want me to get this, or do you want to get this? So we know that there are 34 states now and one territory, Puerto Rico, that are still on the map of states with very high COVID-19 rates that we really want to warn people to try to avoid if they can. We know that people have vacations scheduled, or they have a plan to go to concerts or mass gatherings out of state, so we want to really please encourage you to reconsider. If you are going to go, when you return, remember, please go and get a test as soon as you can, and you have to quarantine for 14 days. If you do travel, you can self self-report on our Erie County website at erie.gov/COVID-19/travel form. If you know somebody who goes away and you want to report them, you can do that. Also, if you decide not to report yourself, you know, still we really are counting on you to help keep our numbers down. So please quarantine for 14 days and please get a test as soon as you can after you return. Remember, are high-risk states because there is a lot of COVID-19, and there's a lot of COVID-19 because they're not masking. There are these large gatherings, and anybody that goes there and participates in any of those events are susceptible. Even going out to dinner can be a risk. So recently, Rhode Island was added to the list, and then the good news is that Washington, D.C. and Delaware were removed. So just in terms of looking at our complaints, that the COVID-related complaints that we receive in Erie County, so again, our environmental health is doing the enforcement arm for bars and restaurants. If you want to report a complaint about a bar or restaurant, you can call our environmental health office at 716-961-6800 or go to our Erie County Health Department website and click on businesses or click down restaurants and lodge a complaint. So far, since the beginning of COVID-19, environmental health has received and investigated over 2,000 complaints. So that they've been very, very busy. And, you know, just in the month of August, they've been very busy. And I think they've had about, 84 complaints that they have investigated. So, and it's only, August 5th. So they've been very, very busy. For complaints about other type of businesses or other type of establishments or activities, you can contact New York PAWS at 833-789-0470. Or go to their online form, and or you can contact your local government, either call your building inspector or somebody in your city, town, or village, and they can help you out. And then again, for complaints about travelers, you can go to our Erie County website to click on our travel form and complete all the information. So you want to go out to a restaurant and, see what their last inspection report is, you can go to our HealthSpace website at healthspace.com/Erie New York. Also, if you're curious about, what about what restaurants have received violations for COVID-19 or closure orders for COVID-19, I think we've had 8 close orders so far with COVID-19. These are all listed on our health space, so anybody has access to that. So again, you go to the health space, and if they've you click on their last inspection or whatever inspection you want to look at, and if you see that all the violations will be listed, if they're specific to COVID-19 or not specific to COVID-19, and if there is a close order that was issued at the time of that inspection, that is also listed on the website. And usually they can get the report out of our of the inspection within 5 business days, so that that's they're trying to be as timely as possible for that. So that information is available to anybody in the public. We just want to announce that we are really trying hard to make sure that all restaurant owners know the right thing to do with keeping their restaurant safe for them, for their workers and for their patrons, and then also figure out the new financial challenges of working in COVID-19. So there's going to be a workshop that's going to be online on August 17th from 9 to 11 a.m. So pre-registration is required. This information is on our website too, so please, all restaurant and bar owners, please take advantage of that. It's really good information to help you figure out, again, how to make your establishment work during COVID-19. And then, of course, we're Erie County. We're continuing to offer health fairs, just do the bread and butter of public health. So this Saturday, August 8th, we are going to also be out in the community in Tonawanda at the Nowanda Park near the police station. So we're also going to be offering free Narcan and the Narcan emergency boxes for businesses that want to put them up in their establishment. We're going to be doing Narcan training. We're going to be having, offering great information about tobacco cessation, our cancer services program, condoms, lots of good sexual health information, and masks and hand sanitizers while the supplies last. Also, we're going to be sponsoring webinars around cancer screening, breast cancer screening, colorectal cancer screening, cervical cancer screening. So our first cancer screening webinar is going to be at the end of the month. It's going to be free. It's going to be on Zoom. Registration is required, so you can go to our website and get all the information. So even though we still have COVID-19, it's still important for everybody to continue doing their required preventive health services, like taking their kids for their immunizations and their well child care, and for us adults, getting our cancer screenings done. So I'm going to turn it over to the county executive. Spritz it up.
Thank you, Doctor. As you may have heard recently, Congress has been involved in negotiations on pretty much one subject and one subject only, and that would be a CARES Act 2. The House of Representatives passed the $3 trillion HEROES Act, which provides $187.5 billion directly to counties and can be used for COVID response and to plug budget holes that may exist by counties and other local governments, such as cities, towns, villages, and school districts. And if you've been paying attention, you know that not only does Erie County have a substantial budget deficit that we've had to address this year, and we're projecting one for next year, so does every town, city, school district, village. And this is not just Erie County. This is all New York State, and for that matter, all across the country. I was just on a conference call with the National Association of Counties as the Northeast Regional Rep, with representatives from counties all across the United States, and everyone's pretty much in the same boat. Our revenues have significantly been hurt. So the House Representative passed the HEROES Act, which includes $3 trillion in total, but $187.5 billion designated solely for counties. The Senate just recently passed the $1 trillion HEALS Act, which has no new assistance for local governments, and it further restricts the use of CARES Act funding. So we have $3 trillion act with the House, $1 trillion act with the Senate, a House bill which is very beneficial for counties and local governments, a Senate bill which has no benefit whatsoever to counties and local governments. So I'm asking the people of our community, and this is not just Erie County, but anybody who's watching this, because this really matters regardless of where you live, including if you live outside of New York State. And we do have people who are Buffalonians who may be living elsewhere now, Western New Yorkers who live elsewhere who do watch this. I need you to write to Congress. I need you to write to the president and tell them local governments need help. I need you to call the president. I need you to call Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. I need you to call Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer. I need you to call the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. I need you to call the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy. And the phone numbers are on the screen, and we'll keep the screen up for a while. And let them know that local governments are on the front lines of the battle against COVID-19. We are the health departments. We are the first responders. We provide significant assistance and subsidies to hospitals or own hospitals, depending on what county we're talking about. We are the ones that run the E911 call center. We are the ones that are setting up the testing sites. We are the ones that have to do the contact tracing. And we're hurt, just like a lot of others are hurt, because of the significant loss of revenues as a result of the economic impact of the pandemic. This is not a political issue. This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is an issue that is affecting communities all across the country. Get a lot of criticism that I see on social media saying, oh, you did this to yourself. I didn't do this in Kentucky. Didn't do this in Arizona. Didn't do this in Florida. But I talked to my colleagues across the country, Democratic and Republican, and we are united as local leaders that we need assistance from the federal government. And that's why I need the people out there that are watching this to take action. You can email these leaders. You can find their emails online, but you can also call them. They are taking calls. The numbers are on the screen. These are to their offices in Washington. If you never called the White House, the phone number to the White House is on the screen, and you can comment and leave a message for the president and his staff. The White House number is area code 202-456-1111. To call Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is now taking the Senate out of session. While we have these huge problems in our country, the Senate went home. Call Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell at 202-224-2541 and tell him to bring the Senate back and get a bill done. Call our Minority Leader from New York State, Charles Schumer. He knows what needs to be done, but call him anyway, 202-224-6542, and let him know that we need to get a bill done and soon. Same thing with the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, 202-225-4965. And the House Minority Leader, Kevin McCarthy, 202-225-2915. Please call them. Let them know that local governments need help. The alternative are major cuts that we've already had to do internally, but we would have to do, of course, for next year. And just to remind everybody, when sales taxes are received, and we've had big losses of sales taxes, Erie County just doesn't get all the sales tax. We share that with our cities, our towns, our villages, and our school districts. And that's across the board like that in the country. We don't have a local income tax, but parts of the country have a local income tax in county level. And they've been significantly hurt as individuals have lost their jobs. This is a global pandemic that's affecting the entire world and has really affected the United States of America. And we need our leaders in Washington to step up to the plate and get a deal done that helps local governments get through this so that we do not have to cut needed programs that the public expects, so that we do not have to raise your property taxes at a time when nobody wants to propose raising property taxes to cover the costs that we are mandated to provide by New York State. So I ask each and every one of you, call these leaders, let them know that this matters, and you're asking for them to get a bill done soon that actually helps local governments. With that, I'll open it up to some questions. Any questions? Sandra.
Well, actually, I don't know if Dr. Burstein would like to answer this, but I didn't know if there were any other restaurants or bars that have been shut down over the last week, and whether...
No restaurants or bars have been shut down. There's some that we've gone and we've issued violations to, but no shutdowns.
Okay. And then some legislators are requesting that the health department provide a report of justification if there were a restaurant or bar that was shut down, and I'm just wondering whether that's something that you guys would be able to...
That's already on the Healthy Space website. That's the information. All bars are provided the justification for their shutdown, all restaurants. So they know why they were shut down. They get the documents. So for them to say that they don't know why they were shut down is false, because they get the documents that identify why they were shut down. The information is available to the general public, including the legislators. If they didn't know that, shame on them, because this is what we do when we have the information that's provided with regards to why a bar or restaurant is shut down. Dr. Burstein said, if you want to go check out your favorite restaurant, let me tell people, you may not want to go and check out our Healthy Space site to see your restaurant, because invariably every restaurant has some sort of violation and for some issue that is not following the sanitary code. But it's all there. It's been public for years. If the legislators don't know that, shame on them. I would hope they know that. And truthfully, there's no reason for us to duplicate effort to put in paper so it gets sent across the street to the legislature, something that's online and that the bar owners and restaurants already get. That'd be a waste of money. It would be a waste of time. Our health sanitarians have more important things to do, a lot of work to do at this point. And why would we go out of our way to give in paper something that the legislators can get online that is available for everyone to see? Well, I would remind the legislators that they almost have no role in this anyway, because this is all controlled by New York State Sanitary Code. As much as they'd like to be able to stop some of these, and I've had a legislator who will go nameless say, you have to stop these, I will not allow it. And I told them, well, you better run for governor, and you better run for assembly, and you better run for Senate, and you better change the New York State Constitution, which takes 2 years to do, because that's the only way it's changing, to which the legislator was like, I didn't know that. It's not in county law. It's actually in New York State Sanitary Code, and in this New York State Sanitary Code gives the power to the health department at the local level to do these inspections and to shut down businesses if they feel that they're violating the law. Chris, I know you had a question next.
No, and the history of all the inspections are up there.
Yeah, the history. Okay. Yeah, the history is online. Once again, I have to. I'm gonna editorialize. I'm shocked, though I'm not shocked. It's like the scene in I can't think of the name of the movie now. It's gonna come to me. I'm shocked there's gambling in this establishment. Casablanca. I'm shocked that there's gambling in this establishment. I'm shocked that legislators don't understand the rules associated with the departments that they oversee, but they do it all the time. How many times legislators have said, we need a law for that? And it's like, no, we don't, because it already exists. They just don't know it. I guess we should probably, and this is not necessarily a political thing, this is Democratic and Republican. I've dealt with both sides of the aisle. We should have a tutorial for every legislator that comes in that explains what county government does, because I know legislators who've been here for a long time and they still don't understand what county government does. Chris.
I have a question for the health commissioner. Actually.
Sure.
Doctor, last Monday, I know you wrote the risks of the Miami Marlins coming to Buffalo far outweigh the benefit. And I know since then you've talked to Major League Baseball and that's relaxed some of your concerns. Is it just that you now know that the players are going to be staying in their hotel? Is that all it is that makes you feel comfortable, or is there more to it than that?
Well, the question is just the concerns about Major League Baseball coming to our area and with players that are especially coming from the high-risk states about, you know, potentially causing a risk in our community. So we did have a really nice call with the Major Baseball League and on Thursday, and it really reassured us on many of our concerns. So the players will be quarantined in a hotel, so they're not even going to hang out in the bar or in the hotel. They really have to stay in their rooms, except if they have special like communal meals just for the team. But however, the exposure to the community will be minimal. They'll go from the airport in a bus to the hotel, a bus to the field, and then the same bus back to the hotel, and then back to the airport. So there'll be minimal exposure to community. I mean, what the county executive and I were very concerned about is, you know, potential exposure of these players, especially from teams that are out of state with, you know, very high prevalence rates interacting in our community. And we were, assured that, that will not happen, that they will enforce quarantine. Also, we learned more about their testing protocol, and it's pretty tight. So again, we will, you know, everybody will know the status of the players before they arrive. So I don't know if you want to mention anything else. Spritz you. If you need to get a slide.
When we had our conference call last week with Major League Baseball representatives as well as the Blue Jays, these were high level representatives, the chief medical officer for Major League Baseball, the chief safety officer for Major League Baseball, the director of labor relations for Major League Baseball. So we were not talking with lower level individuals. And what they gave us was basically everything we wanted, which is no, the players are not going to be able to go out into your community. And they're petrified of what they're seeing with regards to the Marlins and now what, of course, has happened to the Cardinals. They don't want that because they're very worried, as Commissioner Manfred just realized, they may have to shut down the season. I don't know what's going to happen, but if they get more outbreaks, it's possible there's never a game held in Buffalo. First game's supposed to be August 11th. So if they get more outbreaks, they may just say the season's over with. We're not hosting more games. They pretty much were like, whatever you want, we will assure gets done, because we do not want our players exposed to the general public and the general public exposed to the players. What is interesting is our testing rates for positive tests are higher than Major League Baseball's testing rates. Major League Baseball on a weekly basis is releasing their testing rates, and it's very small, but they're seeing cases here and there, and it's usually an outbreak on a team. So actually, they're worried, even though we have very low testing rates here, they're worried about their own players coming in contact with members of our general public, where our testing rate's over 1%, and their testing rate's 0.1%. So of all the people that are tested, the players, the managers, the coaches, the bat boys, the ball boys, everybody that's involved, they actually have a better testing rate than we do locally, and we have one of the best testing rates in the country. So it's kind of a dual purpose. We don't want those players to go out into our general public. They don't want their players going out into the general public when they travel because they're fearful that those individuals will get sick, and then it'll shut down a whole team, which could shut down all of MLB. So it was a very good call. They pretty much said, whatever you want, you got, because we're on the same page with this. And the one thing that also I thought was a very forthcoming from them is they noted how players are now taking this much more seriously. They think some of the players were like, yeah, whatever. And then they saw what happened with the Marlins. And at the same time, we started to see the Cardinals, and they were seeing what was happening with the Cardinals. And what was being spread, and you see it now, Yoenis Cespedes announced from the Mets, he's not playing. He just left. He said, I don't want to risk it. And there's the possibility other players are going to do the same thing. And we're seeing the same thing with the NFL, with NFL players now saying, I'm not going to play this season. I don't want to risk it. I got a family member who's at risk. So I think it's very assuring that they're taking this super seriously. And as a result, we feel confident based on that conversation that we can do this and safely protect our public, and at the same time, safely protect their players from the public.
Just a quick follow-up, if I can. How about the hotel staff and airport staff here? Is there anything in the MLB manual that specifically deals with that?
I would remind everybody, when they fly in, they don't go in through our normal gates at the airport. So if you're worried about the airport, they're not coming in on a normal gate. They're coming in our charter flight. They're getting off. They don't walk through the normal airports, usually a prior aviation, just like the Bills usually do or the Sabres do. So the airport's a little different. Hotel, we were worried. We talked about the protocols, and there's tremendous protocols with that, such that a hotel delivery person is not going to, like, knock on the door, here's your food. They actually have to leave it outside the door, things like that. So we feel pretty satisfied that the measures that they're taking are going to protect the staff of the hotels and the others in our region. As I said, if I felt that this was a danger to our community, we would have said no. But we feel that this can be done, and their testing rates right now are actually better than ours as a community. So they're truthfully worried about their players coming in contact with our general populace just as much as we are worried about the players coming in contact with our general populace. David.
So thanks. So the question is asking about the outcomes that we've received from our outbreak investigation from the New Zion's Baptist Church, right?
Yes.
So far we've identified 14 cases that have been associated with that outbreak, and we are investigating them and notifying everybody, making sure their close contacts are tested and in quarantine. I think this is an example of how contact tracing works. We were able to determine that through contact tracing that there was a possible small cluster associated with activities in the church, and we were able to offer a just-in-time pop-up clinic to making sure that everybody who potentially could have been exposed, who did anything in the church, was able to get tested in a timely fashion. And now we've identified a total of 14 cases. And the investigation's still not over. We may be identifying additional cases. And so that also reinforces that we know that, I wasn't at church or any of the activities that this church held, but I know that many times any type of religious services or celebrations or activities, and a religious setting that, in a church or a synagogue, there can be a lot of people. People are singing, hugging, in close contact, and that shows that you can have outbreaks from those circumstances, regardless if you're in a place of religion, of worship, or if you're in a bar or restaurant, or if you're at an outdoor party, and it's all possible. Right. Yeah. So we've identified more. So it's 14 total people who've been associated with.
That includes the ones from last.
Right.
Is that why not?
So the question was: is that in addition to the numbers that we've already reported? And yes, that is a total of 14 cases that have been associated with this particular outbreak.
So it includes the ones. From
yes.
Last. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Burstein. And also, there was a higher number on positives on Sunday. Is that because of the?
So the question is, on Sunday, there seemed to be a higher proportion of positive tests than we had seen recently in other days of the week. And just want to remind people that just because of the date that we received the test result doesn't necessarily correspond to when the person was tested. Remember, some laboratories have a week or more turnaround time for the lab tests. Also, on the weekend, the reporting system may not be as robust or timely as during the week. So that's why we present the data on our presentations as on weekly numbers, not just on daily numbers, because there can be kind of daily fluctuations. If you remember, on that Sunday, there were a lower number of total tests done than we had seen for most days during the week. So it could have been a combination of when tests were reported to us and the number of positive tests were pretty much similar to what we'd seen the rest of the week, but just the number of total tests done that were reported to us that day was lower. So again, I wouldn't focus on any particular one day. That's why trends are important. The numbers we've seen over an entire week are important, because remember, the labs have backup, and so those numbers for that day of reported tests were people that were tested like 2 days ago, people were tested a week ago, sometimes even more. We're getting even longer turnaround times for labs. So again, looking at the overall trends and looking over the week is really more important.
Dr. Bergstein, should floor hockey, roller rinks, the places that have these floor hockey leagues every year, should they be concerned about being shut down? I spoke to somebody today who is running a floor hockey league in Erie County. They're taking all the precautions necessary, masks, trying to social distance as much as you can for floor hockey, but statewide, they say ice hockey is not allowed, but there's no clear guidance on floor hockey. Should these organizations that are running these leagues be fearful that they will be shut down by the health department for operating a league, even though there's no clear guidance?
So the question is, what about floor hockey? Do they have to be concerned that they could be shut down? So we actually have been in conversation with, a large outdoor floor hockey event that's coming up, the 11-day power play. And we've discussed with them the proper protocols that the state has established. I mean, we look at this more like a medium risk category of a sport, and the state agrees with us. And so, the concern is, I think their protocols were good, that we reduced the risk of transmission. The one concern we had was actually with the gatherings of spectators, the number of gatherings, because it was unclear that that usually with sports events, youth sports events, you're allowed two spectators per player. However, with an event like this, where there are going to be a lot of players and there'll be high turnaround time of different teams, there could be large gatherings if you had two spectators per player. However, they reassured us that with their protocols, they will be under 50 spectators per game, and they're going to make sure that they have a safety person designated to ensure that this is all enforced. They're going to do screening, symptom screening of everybody that participates in the event, whether they be players or spectators, or staff, and so you know, we feel that you know this event is doing what they can in meeting the state guidelines. So that's the only floor hockey event that I'm aware
and I know
of.
You're bringing up a lot of the 11-day power play, but these are individual organizations, you know, that are kind of running like bar leagues. So, for example, so
sure.
You know, I guess does the same apply, Mark? I don't know if you're going to mention that. I assume.
First off, any location that runs a floor hockey league, like a roller rink, has to have filed with New York State a reopening business plan. If they haven't done it, they can't do it. So if the bar says we want to have a floor hockey league at X roller rink and the roller rink has not filed the reopening plan, there's no floor hockey league. If they follow the guidelines as approved by New York State for this type of activity, yes, it can be done. I think the bars need, and these other ones that run it, just need to understand, first they got to check with the rink that they're doing it at, the roller rink, which is usually the floor hockey things are at. But there are some that are actually specifically dedicated to floor hockey. So they have to confirm that it's allowed. They've been filed their report with New York State, and just go from there. I mean, we can't sit here and say no one's ever going to not get shut down. If we got word that there was an event and there were 400 people at the event, it would get shut down. It's as simple as that. It's like the 11-day power play, they reached out to us early on and New York State, and we were working with New York State to ensure that the 11-day power play could continue due to it, but it had to follow the rules in place. I know Mike Lesikowski. I know the Lesikowskis, and they said, we will do whatever it takes to ensure that we can have the 11-day power play. And if it can't happen, it can't happen. But if it can, we'll do it. And they did. And as a result, the 11-day power play is going on. I've played in the 11-day power play. I know it's going to be a heck of a lot easier to do it on ice than it is running around in three-hour shifts. So I would say that anybody who runs this types of league, they first need to confirm that the place that they're playing at is their plan in place. That and New York State has received the plan. If there were issues with the plan, New York State would let them know.
You find it interesting then that you know the state is then saying that playing hockey is less dangerous than bowling?
I'm working right now with the state on trying to get bowling lanes authorized. Actually, I'm doing a tour soon of a local bowling center to see the protocols that they put in place. Once again, as someone who plays hockey and has skated and just skated this weekend, it's actually probably in some ways safer because you have less people congregating in a tight area like you sometimes do in bowling. Anything indoors is going to be worse than anything outdoors. Skating on the rink, especially if you're someone like me, you know, I can sometimes be a human pylon and they just skate around me, especially Peter from your station. He's a very good skater. Yes. You'd give it a shot, David? You'd be the human pylon, though, to Peter. Pete Gallivan, that is. So I think it's important for people to realize that if you're skating and you're not hitting each other and stuff like that, the risk is not the same as it is. Bowling, if you had, and I know what it's like in bowling leagues, and you got 8-10 people around a very tight area. And so what's going to happen, and what I've been hearing, is New York State is working on the protocols for bowling. And hopefully those will be released soon. Bowling leagues usually start by the end of August. And I've been talking to the state about that. And I'm hopeful that the protocols will be released very soon so these bowling leagues could open. My own argument is I don't see a reason why bowling leagues can't because people are bringing their own equipment. They're bringing their own balls. They're bringing their own shoes. It might be difficult for open bowling, which is a different situation where people usually come, grab a ball on the rack, rent the shoes, different situation. But I don't see a problem if they properly separate individuals around the lanes themselves, so they're not all congregating. You get 8-10 people in a tight area over two alleys, two lanes. I think they can do it safely. Oops, a little extra sound there. Hannah.
Quick question. It seems like, you know, the biggest focus now coming out of this is, you mentioned, Dr. Burstein, 80-some complaints so far just within the first, you know, couple of days of August as it relates to bars and restaurants, 2,000 complaints to date. Is it now just cracking, you know, now that the numbers are kind of somewhat low, just making sure that those complaints are addressed? And I mean, how much of the health department is just investigating these complaints every single day?
The question was with regards to the number of complaints that we received, over 2,000 since it started, with regards to bars and restaurants, 80 since the beginning of the month. What are we? Are we just spending our time cracking down on complaints and doing investigations? The answer is yes, but we have a responsibility as health departments to go out there anyway. Our health inspectors would be going out and doing spot checks with regards to restaurants and bars if they serve food, and now they have to serve food anyway. So it's not as if we're doing different things than we did in the past. We're just doing more of it, because if we get a legitimate complaint, and saying, hey, I just was at this restaurant and I didn't feel comfortable because the servers weren't wearing masks, then we'll send somebody out. And some of those complaints have actually led to violations. And complaints that we've received from people have led to closures. So we're going to continue to do that. The one thing I will note is we haven't had to close anybody in the last week. We've seen a lot more of following the rules since we've basically continued to note that we will close you. And we're not the only ones. I know other counties are doing the same thing. And I know the governor's been very, very adamant about shutting down large events that have bringing together a bunch of people, whether it's at a restaurant or it's a party that's being held in a warehouse. And we feel the same way, because this is how we're going to stop the further contraction. All we got to do is look at what happened in the South, the Midwest. Or maybe California is the best example. California shut down, completely shut down, even more than we did here in New York. Had hardly any cases. Then they did a fairly quick reopening, and their numbers shot right through the roof. Now they're the biggest state in the union. But they went from nothing to having the most cases and huge hospitalizations and high deaths. And why? Because they just went out and did their own thing again. And it just shows that you cannot just do it like we used to. Somebody said, when are we getting back to normal? And I told them something that they didn't want to hear, but they go, you're probably right. This is the new normal. I don't know when we'll be going back to the past. But for the foreseeable future, which could be weeks, months, who knows, this is the normal. I don't know when certain things are closed, are going to reopen, if they ever reopen in the immediate future. I don't know. People are keep on asking, are we going to be able to pack the football stadium in the fall? I go, no, we're not going to be able to pack the football stadium in the fall. We're hoping we can get enough people in there to have crowd, because what did the Raiders announce this week? Do you guys know what the Raiders announced this week? You don't? No fans. The new Las Vegas Raiders in their brand new stadium announced there will be no fans attending games in Las Vegas. It was announced a couple days ago. And we got a lot of, I got contacts from folks. Well, how are we going to stop that from happening here? And the only way we're going to stop that from happening here is to keep the contraction rate to a very, very small amount. And then the NFL may just do what the Major League Baseball did, which is no fans, no fans at all. So it's a concern. It's a concern that the only way we're going to be able to get through this as safely as possible, so that we have the low contraction rate, low hospitalization rate, and a low amount of deaths going forward, is to continue to follow the rules, which are the new normal. And that means if we have some violators and we have to shut them down, we will shut them down. Because if we don't, then other people think they can get away with it, and the next thing you know, we'll be like California, we'll be like Arizona, we'll be like Texas, or for that matter, we'll be like Ohio, which was doing better than New York State and is not anymore. And as a result, they're back to having shut down a lot of things, because they're now one of those states that's in the red category for being a kind of a bad state. Michael's next.
There's a concern, obviously, about schools reopening next month, especially with testing. A lot of conflicting stuff coming out from CDC guidelines to New York State to what everyone was thinking about testing. I guess my question to you is, the county prepared to offer resources either in helping fund tests or physically providing tests to all the school districts? Do you guys have any say in this?
The question is in regards to school districts reopening and the possibility of having to do testing for school districts. Our testing clinics will be open to anybody who applies. If we had an outbreak in a school It would be no different than if we had an outbreak at a church. If we feel that we need to do a advanced clinic, we would work with New York State, and that's what was done in the church, is we worked with New York State to provide that pop-up clinic where our Department of Health staff actually administered the test, but the tests were performed and analyzed by New York State at its lab in Albany. So if we had to do that, we would. There's going to be additional requirements. It's no different than the requirements in some ways than we see with barbershops and salons where they have to get tested every 2 weeks and so forth. We've been able to handle that internally with our county and other resources. We'll be there to assist as needed. And if teachers, administrators, others, they're going to still have lunches and things like that, and the lunch lady needs to be tested, we're here with our clinics to test. But if we do see an outbreak, we would address it just like any other outbreak as necessary to eliminate the risk that may result from others. We don't have a decision on this. A lot of people were saying, well, is the county going to allow schools to open? We don't make that decision. The decision is made by the New York State Education Department in consultation with the school district, which all had to submit their plan. Now New York State's reviewing it. The governor's going to make a determination as to whether regions should open and when for schools. We've already known some schools have announced they're going to push back their opening, whether it's a week, 2 weeks, or even a month. We don't have a decision in that. We don't get to review the plans, and we don't approve them. And to tell you the truth, we may have some knowledge here in the Department of Health with regards to health things, but we're not specialists on education. We really almost play no role whatsoever. County government plays a role in a lot of different things in county government and in county in general. But one thing we don't is education. So we would leave it up to the experts to determine if it's appropriate for a school district to open. And then if there is an outbreak or appears to be an outbreak, we'll be there to test, to work with our partners in New York State and determine if something should be closed as a result of it.
And you have enough resources in case there is an outbreak, say Buffalo Public. I mean, you mentioned the barbershops. So the school is way bigger than a barbershop.
We have enough resources to do the testing, to administer the test. As we talked about recently, we have thousands and thousands of test swab kits. Tens of thousands, actually. We have sufficient testing supplies. If there's a certain amount that we can do per week in our public health lab, but we also have shipped out swabs that we have to New York State to do testing, and they basically run a 24-hour shop with their test lab. So I feel confident we'll be able to provide the swabbing if needed be in a specialized situation. Whether the analysis is done here or done in Albany, it'll get done. It's just it may be driven down the thruway, which is what happened this past weekend with the test kit with the church.
Now that we're closer to the start of football season, I'm wondering if you've changed your view at all on licenses for private tailgate lots, and if not, are you leaning on Orchard Park town officials on that issue?
I've not talked to the supervisor recently. Actually, it is something I'm going to be doing soon. I've not talked to Supervisor Keem with regards to the lots. I think people should truly hope that they just have a football season. There's a high possibility within the next month there won't be football. And if there is, they should pray that they have football and just football, because I think you see what Las Vegas just announced. No fans. They just spent billions to build that new stadium. And fans paid lots of money for personal seat licenses and a right, and none of them are going to be able to attend the games. Major League Baseball, I know, is hoping beyond hope that they'll be able to finish their season. Right now, the only ones that really seem to have had a pretty good assurance of it is the NHL and the NBA, because they're in bubbles. The NHL's had no positive tests recently. NBA seems to have really reduced and almost had no positive tests recently because they're in the bubbles. The ones that are not in the bubbles took the risk, and they're seeing in Major League Baseball now what that was, which is you could end up having outbreaks with teams, and then those teams travel. So my view has not changed with regards to should there be tailgating. There should not be mass tailgating. Let's just try to get football. This is a year we got a great Bills team. And it would be the most Buffalo thing to have this great Bills team Tom Brady out of the division, and then there's no football. That's the worst thing that could happen. And that's the most Buffalo thing that could happen of all. So let's do what's best. If there's no tailgating, so be it. Have fun at your house. Order some pizza. Buy some beer. Do it at your house. Because I'd rather do that and watch the Bills on the field than the alternative, which is no football. And for those who think that that is not a possibility, it is a possibility. The Raiders would not have announced no fans unless they were very worried that by having fans, it could have shut down their season. And I would not be surprised to see other teams follow the Raiders.
Sorry,
David.
So the question is, how are the schools going to be able to test their students and staff? So the way that we have interpreted what the state health department, the governor has said, is that the schools have to be prepared to ensure that students and staff are tested. So that's different than them actually having to perform all the tests themselves. So we are going to be, if there is a situation where a school needs guidance to be able to get staff or students tested, we'll work with each school on a case-by-case situation. So if there could be an extreme as an outbreak, as a county executive mentioned, then we may have to go in and facilitate and work with New York State to ensure that, all students and staff get tested. However, if the school wants to be proactive, or if they have a staff or students that may have symptoms, then that would be a different situation, and we would help them identify places in the community, including one of our clinics, where people get tested. So again, there's a finite number of tests available. There's a finite number of people that can collect the specimens, and so we all have to work together to figure out how to make that work. Right. So the comment was the observation that it would be very difficult for all school districts in Erie County to be reliant on the Erie County Health Department for testing. And that is correct. I mean, we don't have the capacity to do all that testing. However, if there is an outbreak in a particular school, we would work with that school and partner with the state health department to ensure pop-up testing was done. I'm always available to the school superintendents, and they know that if they have questions about if somebody should get tested, or if how they can get tested, we will advise them. And also, we are as important, or even more important, is working with the school, with the schools and the school district on if they do have one or two cases in a school, is with the contact investigation. So again, we partner with the school to if they have a case to identify who would be the close contact of that particular staff person or student, and because they'll have to help us identify who close contacts are, and so we will be working closely with the schools on all the case investigations and contact notifications. So again, we look at this as a partnership, and nothing has changed. That's how we went in, the idea we went in with it, and that's the idea that we still have.
So and I'll
turn it over.
I'm sorry, just a single student test positive, does that count as an outbreak if it's a single student test positive in school?
So the question is, what happens if a single student tests positive in a school? So again, we would work with the school to help us obtain information to do the case investigation and the contact notification and ensure that and strongly encourage all close contacts to get tested. And, you know, that's how we would identify a cluster if there is a cluster. So, again, it we have to take it on a case-by-case situation. And, we know from the recent church investigation that contact tracing does work. We can identify clusters. We can identify outbreaks. And we will, it's the same formula with working with the schools that is for the churches or working with any other type of business. So I'm going to turn over to the county executive.
Are there any other questions?
What about the restaurant owner workshop? Is that being capped at all? I know you want to
yes.
register, so I'm wondering if we should urge owners to register ASU at ASAP.
The question was with regards to the restaurant owner's workshop. Is a cap. There is a limit because of how it's being done by the, I'm not certain if this is WebEx or Zoom. So we are telling those to, you need to pre-register because you have to get a code to then be able to view it on Monday, August 17th. This is a combination, it's a program that's being put on by the Erie County Business Task Force as well as Buffalo State College. And we do ask any restaurant owner who's interested in participating in this workshop to pre-register now. The information is on the slide, and we'll be sharing it, of course, over the next few days. But we need you to pre-register. If you try to click on the day of, you're not going to get it. And to my knowledge, there is a limit. So if it's a big number. So, I mean, if there were 300, yeah, we could fit 300. But if there were 3,000, we might not be able to do that. Any other questions? If not, I want to thank everyone for coming in. Please continue to follow rules with regards to mask wearing. Do what you need to do to protect your family, to protect yourself, and to protect others. I wear a mask to protect myself and to also protect others because I don't think I have any reason to believe I have the coronavirus and COVID-19, but we know there's asymptomatic people out there that can share it. So wear your mask. We'll all get this through together. And as I said, this is how we're going to end up having Bills games in the fall, is because we follow the rules and the NFL can actually hold its games. Let's hope that that happens. It would be the most Buffalo thing to happen, that we have this great team with a great quarterback and looking to win the AFC East, and then they don't hold the NFL season. So let's follow the rules so that we can do that. Take care, everyone. Be safe and be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.